May it please the Court.
This has been a day of such courteous counsel. It's really been nice.
Well, I'll try to keep it nice, Judge. But I think the issue I'm going to raise is not one that's going to be very popular. It's our view, Your Honors, that the police officers in Fort Wayne subjected Mr. Williams to an unconstitutional seizure and search of his person and his car. Later, in order to cover up the Fourth Amendment violation, Officer Taylor testified falsely. When it was subsequently revealed that the trial court had credited what was in fact perjury, Judge Springman ignored that evidence and applied incorrect legal standards, proceeded on a faulty analysis, and basically bootstrapped the entire argument.
Is it your position that when we review the videotape, there will be no doubt whatsoever that Mr. Williams was handcuffed before he was put into the back of the squad car?
I can't say that there will be no doubt, Your Honor. In terms of being handcuffed and placed in the squad car, there's other items of evidence, including Dan Bowers, the investigator's timeline, in his review of that particular videotape where he came to that conclusion, as well as Mr. Williams' allegation in his motion to reconsider and third motion to suppress, which Judge Springman said she would consider along with the videotape, and which was never addressed in her subsequent opinions. Additionally, I would add this, that when Officer Smith testified at the trial, he did not corroborate Officer Taylor's testimony that Mr. Williams was handcuffed. He did not corroborate him.
We look at the videotape the way NFL referees look at him.
Well, that is a... I think some of the things in the videotape are going to be conclusive. I think the government has rather cavalierly, based on Officer Taylor's descriptions, described the store clerk's appearance and behavior as being distraught and nearly in tears. I mean, the videotape will clearly show that she's conducting business with other customers. She sees the police arrive. She greets them outside. There's nothing about being in tears. So I think there's some overstatement there, and I don't blame the government for this, of course, or the prosecutors, rather.
But she did set off the silent or the alarm.
She did set off the alarm because she figured he was in the store for some 26 minutes, when in fact the videotape shows he was in the store for approximately 12 minutes. And the videotape shows that he had some contact with her, and she said in her interview that he actually was trying to get her telephone number. So apparently there was something else other than a robbery taking place there.
Tell me this. Does it matter what reasons the officers gave for arresting Mr. Williams, so long as by the time they arrest him, they knew that the gun was stolen? In other words, isn't the test for validity of the arrest an objective one rather than a subjective one?
Your Honor, here's the problem with that particular question. Throughout the pretrial proceedings in this case, it was made clear that Mr. Williams was arrested for possession of marijuana. And, of course, that didn't take place for up to an hour later. Officer Taylor, he was consistent on one thing. Officer Taylor was consistent that Williams was arrested for possession of marijuana. The case agent in the detention hearings testified Williams was arrested for possession of marijuana. Neither said for possession of a stolen gun. The pre-sentence investigation report in this case did not indicate that he was arrested for possession of a stolen gun, but rather that a month later he was arrested for possession of a gun that was not licensed. A month later that charge came. He never was charged with possession of a stolen gun. And finally, a point that really needs to be made on that, that I think I'm missing, is that we know that under Indiana law, a law that I'm not familiar with being from Illinois, but that a gun is allowed in a car as long as there is a permit. So, Judge Rovner, there's a real question about whether and when Taylor went about and determined that that gun was in fact stolen. But the record is clear that he was arrested for possession of marijuana and not the gun. And I think that's a red herring in this case, and it's something Judge Springman relied on that's really not supported in the record. The officers knew when they questioned Williams that no robbery had occurred. They were completely satisfied that no robbery had occurred. Williams had made no verbal or physical threats to the clerk. He had no contraband on his person. There were no warrants for his arrest. He had properly identified himself with a valid ID.
But once he tells Officer Taylor that he was driven to the area in his girlfriend's gray Taurus rather than the rust-colored Cutlass that Taylor had seen him driving less than an hour before. Aren't they justified in detaining him?
Judge, I would respectfully submit that Williams already should have been allowed to proceed on his way before that question took place under this court's opinion in Childs. It's our view that that extended the duration of the stop.
But I thought you had conceded that the officers had a legitimate basis to conduct a Terry stop.
That is conceded, that the Terry stop was valid. It's that the duration was exceeded and the scope was exceeded. And the timing of when that question was asked, Judge, it wasn't until William, at that point, Taylor even testified. He was fully satisfied that no criminal activity had occurred. But then he decided, these are his words, decided to take it further. He decided to take the investigation further by questioning Williams about the car and his mode of transportation.
But isn't the point of a Terry stop to detain the individual briefly for questioning? I mean, that's what distinguishes a Terry stop from a consensual
encounter,
and why, you know, reasonable suspicion for the stop is required. And, you know, whether she was hysterical or just scared or whatever, I mean, they were called there.
Absolutely, they were right. And what she expressed the silent alarm, they were completely justified in making the Terry stop. But their concerns were completely alleviated after a very brief period of time, which is allowed under Terry. And then, but they continued to question him, and under Childs, that's what takes it too far. And I would add, Your Honors, that within 2.5 minutes, the videotape shows, or at least Williams' allegation shows and Bauer's timeline shows, that within 2.5 minutes, the questioning is done. And Williams is handcuffed and placed in the back of a locked squad car. We know that Terry allows a brief investigatory stop for weapons, but here's what occurred that went wrong at that particular point in time. It was more than a pat-down. It was a search because the officers took the money off of Williams, and they did not return it to him. Okay? Now, I know the government has claimed otherwise in its response, but even the prosecutor in preliminary proceedings saying the agents or the officers recovered those items and did not return them. But Taylor's own testimony is key to this. Taylor testified, upon finding the money during the, quote, initial pat-down, quote, the money was placed in the continuity at that time. Okay, it was taken into continuity, and as another officer said, continuity in their terms means into evidence at that time. That's transcript record 152 at 172. I think that's key, because that's before the questioning begins about your mode of transportation. That's before the unknown customer comes out and points to the car. They've already taken something from him and taken it into evidence, the money. And that constitutes a search under this court's decisions in Ionco and this court's decisions in Childs. And the fact that Williams was placed in a car for up to 30 minutes to an hour in a locked car, in a locked squad car, we know it's locked because anyone with common sense knows you cannot exit from a back seat of a squad car. And Williams alleged that anyway. We know that a constitutional violation occurred under Ionco and Childs. That much is clear. Those points were the key points in Ionco before this court, the withholding of personal property and being withheld in a locked squad car for 30 minutes. That's why Ionco controls the disposition, although facts can be disputed or distinguished, certainly, but the key facts comport with those in Ionco. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Holler.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
May it please the Court. There's obviously been a lot of factual disputes and a lot that has gone on in this case. Ultimately, I believe the case comes down to a rather simple question, which is, was it unreasonable for the officers to hold Mr. Williams at the scene for a brief period of time while they investigated to determine exactly what happened at the Dolly Madison?
I would like to... Is it a legitimate inference that... Judge Springman failed to review the videotape before she issued her initial ruling on the motion to suppress?
I don't think it's...
The chronology she recites, isn't that inconsistent with the videotape?
Well, I mean, one of the things that's inconsistent is something that wasn't pointed out. the more lawyers you get on a case, the more different things you can look at and point out. The main thing that she, I guess, gets wrong is the thing that she corrects in the second motion to suppress, which is it took a longer period of time after this until the marijuana was discovered, because it took a much longer period of time to actually stop the tape and review the marijuana. So she does correct that. The dispute as to, I guess the only other dispute that I really see there is the, you know, when does the customer come out of the store, and it's apparently as he's being moved from directly next to the store over to the squad car. And that actually makes sense with the chronology, Judge Rovner, because they're at the scene, they're detaining him for a couple minutes, and it's at that point that they say, listen, this is something's going on here, because you're saying that you walked here or you came in a gray Taurus and we just saw you an hour ago in a different car, and we need to go back and talk to the clerk. We need to go figure out exactly what's going on here. So they move him away. You can see on the video, and less than 50 seconds later, one of the officers comes in the store and says, I mean, you can't hear what he says, but he's clearly asking the clerk or the store people, did anybody see how this guy came here? And the customer says, yes, of course he did. You know, there's this, they walk out, his car's right there. You can see it right there. And then at that point, you know, it's pretty much game over. I mean, we can talk all we want about how it's not fair to hold him for 30 minutes or 60 minutes, but as the cases the government has cited in our brief show, they're diligently pursuing a means of investigation. They want to see what he was doing in the store, and they should be able to hold him when he's trying to leave.
Now, where would we be if we look at the videotape and we conclude that he was handcuffed when he was put into the back of the squad car? Would the officers have had a legitimate basis to handcuff Mr. Williams at that point?
Well, I think, as we point out in a footnote to our brief, if you were to reach that conclusion, and I don't think you will, Judge Rovner, I really don't, but if you were, that's where I would go, would be to that footnote in the brief, and to look at Vega and Robinson in those cases and essentially decide if that level of detention was justified based on the fact that he was giving suspicious answers, based on the fact that he did have a pretty sizable quantity of money in several different pockets where there might be a suspicion that he had been engaged. I'm sorry.
So are you arguing that handcuffing in that circumstance that would have been a de facto arrest, would it not?
Well, I guess if the officers, it's so hard, that's not what happened. It's so hard for me to envision. But I suppose if they had felt that for the need of their safety and protection, because they're essentially going to have to stay at the scene longer to conduct a longer inquiry to figure out why are we here, what's going on, what's happened in the situation. We've only got, I guess there were actually three officers here. But this guy's trying to leave. He's told lies to us, and we're concerned, and we think that for our own safety and protection, we just need to handcuff him.
Now,
but he wasn't handcuffed behind his back. I mean, you can see his hands are in front of his body. He's standing kind of like this. It's not clear whether he's just been asked by the officers to keep his hands free. I mean, you know, are
so
my
you
hands
don't
cuffed?
Know.
Can't tell.
I mean, you also are. We're not going to know, are we, when we look at the videotape, if he was handcuffed?
We will not. No, there's no way. There's no way. His hands are not visible. They're in front. He's one of the officers has his arm on the other one, and he's being led toward the squad car. And his hands are not visible. I mean, it's kind of a grainy videotape anyway, and you have to realize the tape is in the store, so it's really just looking through this small glass opening. He's on camera on this particular part for at most 3 seconds. And the timeline, you know, Your Honors, the timeline is attached, and it's a defense investigator timeline. So it's sort of his view that if I was a defense attorney and my client was telling me that I had been handcuffed, I would assume that I was. But you know, the officer testifies he wasn't handcuffed. He testifies he was put in the squad car unhandcuffed. And he testifies, I think what he essentially testifies is, he was handcuffed for possession of marijuana. He was at the scene. We had the gun, which is stolen property. Then we found the bag of marijuana. And the quantity of marijuana, frankly, Your Honor, is going to be a higher offense than mere possession of stolen property. And you're going to want to do further investigation to determine whether he had a license for the gun or anything of that nature, whereas the marijuana was slam bang. So that's what he was eventually arrested on.
Were there scales in the glove compartment?
Yes, there were. There were zigzags. There was drug paraphernalia. I can't recall specifically whether there were scales. That search was conducted back at the station house. The drugs in the car were in the locked glove box. That was towed, and then a search warrant was obtained. So the only drugs that were found at the scene were the ones that he voluntarily left in the bag. I mean, you know, it's kind of an odd case, Your Honors, because the defendant is denying that he owns the car. He says it's not even my car at all. I mean, you know, Judge Lee found the outstanding, which we object to, because he's saying this is not mine. It's not my car. He's abandoned the marijuana that he leaves in the store, and he's trying to get as far away as possible. And, you know, it's at the end of the day, this, if they had let him continue along his merry way, the same thing was going to happen 3 minutes later. They were going to walk in the store and say, hey, did this guy really just walk here from Southgate Mall? No, his car's right there. The gun's in plain view. They're going to find the bag in the store with his items that he purchased and the marijuana in it. They're going to tow the car. They're going to get all of the drugs. I mean, we're objecting to ultimately, Officer Taylor did not lie. There's no clear error to indicate that. The district court may have made some initial mistakes in her opening brief or in her first motion to suppress regarding the timeline, but she corrected those in her second motion. Any errors that she did make, she corrected and clearly said what you just said. Once we see the gun, that's right. Yeah, it took longer to find the marijuana, but you're already entitled to hold him on the gun, and you're entitled to hold him while we look at the marijuana. And there was then no further error when he tries to raise the same issues a third time on that point either. So for all of those reasons, we believe that under the sequence of events, you know, he was not handcuffed by his back. He did testify that he confronted Mr. Williams. Officer Taylor testified he did confront Mr. Williams with the clerk, with the customer's story. The customer comes outside the store and specifically points it out, so that's pretty consistent with what one would see on the record, and that's in transcript page 15 of the suppression hearing. And they needed time to hold him while they're in the store looking at the videotape. They need time to have him sitting in the car, not standing around on the street, especially as things are getting worse for him. I don't think that was an improper decision on their part to do that. I really don't think that it was unreasonable or violated the Fourth Amendment. Under the facts found by the district court are not clear error. The videotape will not show them to be clear error. And under those facts, the motion to suppress was properly denied. So we would ask that the conviction be affirmed unless the court has further questions.
Thank you. 1 minute, please.
Thank you. Judge Springman said it all this occurred within a matter of minutes, and we know that not to be accurate. We also know that Judge Springman never addressed the contentions raised by Mr. Williams in the motion to reconsider and a third motion to suppress. With respect to the handcuff issue, the defendant alleged it. Judge Springman never considered it. The investigator's report established it. Judge Springman never considered it. And Officer Smith never corroborated Officer Taylor about being unhandcuffed. We were never allowed to challenge this in the district court. It was never considered by the district court because Judge Springman considered the rulings on Rule 59 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. She considered it on an ineffective assistance of counsel claim, which was never raised by the defendant and was specifically repudiated by the defendant. It was always addressed on a matter of timeliness. Judge Springman never went to the merits. It's clear she never looked at the videotape. It's clear she never considered Williams's allegations in the motion to reconsider, and that was the error in this case. Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. Thanks for taking the appointment, too. You did very well.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Court will be in recess till tomorrow morning.
You poor soul.